You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who've been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million-dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyer's fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by healthcare costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Home Depot is coming to my town, riding in on tracks of gold, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is not merely another of Home Depot's big box stores, mind you, but by gollies, a high-tech data center. To get the giant corporation to choose Austin, state and local officials approached it in the professional manner that corporations now expect. By frantically hurling huge sackfuls of taxpayers' money at them, desperately hoping that our sacks are fuller than those being hurled by other cities. In this case, our sacks contain more than $30 million, and, lucky us, Home Depot grabbed them. Our public officials are now peacocking around over this deal, bragging that they're delivering 500 jobs to we the people, averaging $58,000 a year in pay. Actually, though, you wouldn't get one paying $58,000. That average includes the salary, bonuses, and such of those up in the new data center's executive suite. Averages, you see, are tricksters. If you are paid $20,000, for example, and the top dog gets $200,000, you're averaging $110,000 each. Home Depot's package includes nearly $6 million in a special tax break from the Austin School District. Yes, that means $6 million that should go to the education of school kids will not, for district officials have given this corporation an exemption from paying its school taxes. Yet the Austin School Board is trying to pull a fast one on us by asserting that the state reimburses school districts for any revenue they lose when they dole out tax breaks to corporations. As one board member put it, there is no cost to the Austin taxpayer. Earth to school board. The Austin taxpayer is also a state taxpayer. The tax giveaway to Home Depot still comes from our pockets, and it's still $6 million that could have been added to education, but now won't be. This is Jim Hightower saying, Home Depot is super rich. Why shouldn't it pay its taxes like our homegrown businesses do?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. That's me, Tom Hartman, here with you. The place, our show, the place where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. We would start with maybe this little bit of the radio frequency. Oh, boy, it's going to be an uphill battle. I called Senator Harry Reid about 15 minutes ago. I didn't, of course, get through to the senator, but I did speak with one of his aides. I was on hold for about 10 minutes. His telephone number is area code 202-224-3542. I'll give that out in just a minute. Again, I encourage you to give him a call. And I said, basically, I'm not from Nevada, so I'm not a constituent of Senator Reid. However, since Senator Reid is now in charge of all the Democrats, and I vote mostly Democratic, and here in Vermont, I actually contacted the Democratic Party and said, hey, sign me up. I'll do anything I can with you. Although I also hang out with the folks in the Progressive Party and the Green Party, and that's fine with all of them. In any case, I said, because you're the representative of all the Democrats, you are, in a way, a representative of mine. I am, in a way, your constituent, and so I would like to voice my opinion. And the guy said, sure. And I said, my opinion is that Harry Reid should join with John Conyers and the other members of Congress, apparently to include Congressman Bernie Sanders, in challenging the electors from the state of Ohio as a result of widespread, intentional vote fraud. Yes, it's time to use the F word, vote fraud in the state of Ohio. And I said, and it's quite clear to me, and I think anybody who has looked at it, that there was also substantial vote fraud in the states of New Mexico, North Carolina, and particularly, again, in Florida. And so I would encourage Senator Harry Reid to stand up along with those members of Congress. And the fellow said, well, I've been getting a lot of calls like this morning, and I thank you very much for it. And I said, you're welcome. And that was the end of the phone call. So area code 202 is the phone number. That'd be Washington, D.C., of course, 224-3542. The direct line right into Senator Harry Reid's office, 202-224-3542. On our message board, you can get to our message boards at TomHartman.com. You can also, of course, get to our chat room. You go to TomHartman.com, and you have to get into the message board first to get to the live chat. And then there's a link to the live chat room, which is full of folks right now. Interesting conversations, and from time to time I share bits and pieces of them with you. And very often I learn things from what's being said on the chat room. Of course, the big event is going to happen at 1 p.m. Eastern time, about 50 minutes from now. And I am trusting my friends in the chat room will be informing me of what's going on. We'll be monitoring the news as well here. Our Athenwood studio in the People's Republic of Vermont, high up in the Green Mountains, where it is a dusty snow coming down. It's that kind of granular snow. It not the big flakes, but anyhow, it's a beautiful snowy day. Kind of a gray snowy day. Every day you're breathing is a good day. Anyhow, as I received an email, or not an email, this was a post on our message board. And it's just marvelous. This is from a fellow who says, I'm a conservative who has recently discovered Mr. Hartman filling in on America Radio Left Radio. Before the rejoicing begins, I am not converting, just living outside an echo chamber. He seems rational and interesting, but he confused me yesterday. And he raises some questions. I would like to answer some of those questions. I think this is important stuff. Oh, by the way, just before I get into this, two things. Number one, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the show. And or if you have a question or particularly something that you think might be sufficiently urgent that we need to get into it before the second hour. Secondly, this hour, the cons are added again. At the bottom of the hour, I will be advising an advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney, or at least I will be questioning him. They are at it again, drowning democracy in the bathtub, this time Social Security. This is part of the full court press by the Bush administration offering their folks to the press. And, of course, you're going to be hearing all these guys and all these right-wing talk shows. You're going to hear one of them here, too, in another 20 minutes. In our second hour, our Everything You Know is Wrong segment, our regular Thursday feature, what do UFOs have to do with tsunamis, and what do UFOs have to do with Pat Robertson and George Bush? Really, trust me on this, you're going to want to hear this. And the third hour, torture, our reserves breaking down, and faux news. Is this a recipe for disaster? Is the disaster already here? Let's take a quick call from Margaret, Nashville, North Carolina. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for doing what you do. I've just seen, I was watching the hearings on Gonzales, and they had a ticker on C-SPAN, which is amazing. But they had a ticker that said that Senator Boxer from California had signed on to challenge the vote.
Interesting.
Heard anything?
Well, you know, I've heard that, and I've heard that she hasn't. I've heard that she has. Last night on Keith Olbermann's show and in his blog today, he says that there are 6 senators who have signed on. So we'll see. We'll see.
Senators.
Yeah. Now, see, this takes me back to the conspiracy theory that I posited with Ellen Ratner a couple of days ago, and she kind of poo-pooed, but I still think that there's some legitimacy to it. The Gonzales hearings are today.
Yeah.
That is not an accident. They were scheduled by the Republicans to be today. They could just as easily have been tomorrow. But today is the day the Electoral College votes, or the votes are opened in the Senate. And today is the day, if there's going to be a debate on the legitimacy of the vote in Ohio, it will happen.
It happens at 1 o'clock, they said.
Right, exactly, at 1 o'clock, in about 45 minutes, 1 o'clock Eastern time. And so I find it interesting that this is also the day that probably the most contentious of all of the hearings. I mean, Bush has got a whole bunch of people who need to be confirmed. The most contentious of all of them, the one where the Democrats are threatening to roll out tapes we haven't seen before of Abu Ghraib, the result of Gonzalez's memo, or the memo that he passed through and said to the president, this is good stuff. Yeah, I find it just fascinating that that these two things are happening on the same day. This administration is so good at manipulating the news cycle. It's just like we've gotten now 2 reports, one from the Chinese news service and one from the Pakistani news service, that al-Zarqawi, the notorious terrorist in Iraq, has been captured, that he was captured 3 days ago.
Oh.
I'm waiting for them to roll him out on a day when there's some big scandal about the Bush administration. The next time some bad news comes for George W. Bush, guess what? We found Zarqawi, and that will dominate the news cycle.
Right.
So
right.
I
No, I
call me paranoid, but here I am.
No, it's not paranoia. They'd like to label us that, but that's not what it's all about. They're literally just drowning it out with such lies.
Yeah, well,
that's all the American people in general are hearing. Those of us who are paying attention to Air America and C-SPAN and you know, new internet, you know, news services on the internet, we're getting a different picture.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We're fewer than what we need to be.
Well, or the mass media is allowing fewer of our voices through. Crossfire is going off the air this week. The last actual overt liberal on television, Bill Moyers just retired, and now Paul Bogala and James Carville. As much as I consider them somewhere between decent liberals and Democratic Party hacks, I have a lot of respect for both of these guys, and they are going off the air. The end of that, and so it's going to be nothing but. And what do you see? I mean, you know, you see.
Oh, I don't even watch it anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I cannot. Liars just turn me off so badly, and it's so obvious they're lying. I mean, Gonzalez all morning has had such a smirk on his face. It's asinine.
Yeah.
It's just such a smirk. So, woke up this morning and I thought, why don't we create a party called Move On? Just Move On, America.
Yeah. Why don't all this
Democratic corporate and Republican corporatism.
You know, Margaret, a friend of mine called this morning, and Rob called Op-Ed News, and I believe it was Rob that I had this conversation with, and he made the comment that the person I was talking with made this comment about the taking back the Democratic Party, blah, 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 and what would happen if Kerry doesn't show up, if no senator shows up, that's the end of the Democratic Party. And I said, no, I think the end of the Democratic Party will be if another DLC Democrat gets in charge of the Democratic Party rather than Howard Dean. And this person made the comment, well, if Howard Dean takes over the party, then it won't be the Democratic Party anymore. And my comment is, no, then it'll be the Democratic Party again.
With
the large D as well. It'll be the Democratic Party of Franklin Roosevelt. And that's the point, is that the Democratic Party has lost its way. And actually, the traditional values of the Democratic Party, people, you know, in the media, even in the mainstream media, are calling them left. They are the mainstream of America. 80% of Americans want national health care. 95% of Americans want us to have a Social Security system that's intact. Most Americans want our water to be clean. They want our environment to be protected. They want our national parks and forests not to be the private poaching grounds of the timber industry, the lumber industry.
Yeah.
It's on it goes. They want to have some protections on corporate power. Margaret, thanks for the call. I got to move along, but I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. As I said, want to get to this. Well, let's take another call. Here, Rick in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
How are you today, Tom?
I'm great. What's up? I'll get better. Yes.
Did you hear that Barbara Boxer is going to be a senator that is going to come forward to question the votes in Ohio today?
I have heard that from everybody except Barbara Boxer. So I will believe it when I see it. I'm inclined to believe it. But
she's on C-SPAN right now, so you can believe it.
Oh, she is?
Yes.
Oh, remarkable.
Now,
okay.
In addition to that.
Great, thank you.
I'd like to keep informed before I call you, because you're the purveyor of truth. Limbaugh is on right now saying, oh, look at these Democrats. 4 years ago, they objected to the fact that Gore won the popular vote, but not the electoral. Now they want to abolish the popular vote, which, of course, is not what anybody wants to do they?
Well, nobody 4 years ago was objecting to the fact that Bush lost the popular vote. What they were objecting to was the fact that somewhere between 25 or 30,000 and 90,000 African Americans were removed from the voter lists in the state of Florida by Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris illegally.
Right.
And they were not put back on for the 2002 election as a court order had demanded. In fact, many of them are not back on for the 2004 election.
And
that's what was being protested. What was being protested was vote fraud, and that's the exact same thing that's being protested today. And you could expect Rush Limbaugh to lie about that.
Right.
No
well,
surprise.
Of course, in addition to what you just said there, which is true, it's also true that if they had actually counted every vote, Gore probably still would have won Florida.
No, probably about it. They did. They did. A news consortium did count every vote, and the New York Times reported on November 12th, and you'll find the actual quotes in the New York Times in the article that I did for CommonDreams.org, which is up today. You go to CommonDreams.org, you can find, or go to TomHartmann.com, click Articles on the Democracy, it's at the top, that the New York Times found that when they counted every vote in Florida, sure enough, Al Gore won by any standard you use to measure it. Any standard. Al Gore won the state of Florida. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartmann listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartmann because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartmann, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont, or what you need. At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send.
And welcome. Welcome back.
Of Ohio. This is our opportunity as a member of the Senate and a member of the House to bring to national attention and require the people of the House, the people who were sent here to represent the people.
This is Congressman Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
Again, I thank my colleague, Senator Boxer, for being willing to step out. I thank her for her leadership. I thank her for her integrity.
Live on C-SPAN 2.
For her support.
Congresswoman, in your written statement, when you admit...
And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, we have with us David Swanson. He's the media coordinator of the International Labor Communications Association and board member of the Progressive Democrats of America. For more information, ilcaonline.org is their website. Hey, David.
How are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. I understand you are at one of the... Well, why don't you just tell us where you're at?
I am in my office so I can be on a good line, and I'm across the street from Lafayette Square Park, where a major rally has just concluded, at which the Reverend Jesse Jackson announced some terrific news.
This Lafayette Square Park being in Washington, D.C.?
Across the street from the White House.
Right.
Exactly, and the cheers cannot have been missed inside the walls of that house when Reverend Jackson announced that Senator Barbara Boxer is being joined by Senators Chris Dodd, Hillary Clinton, Harry Reid, and Barack Obama, joining eight members of the House in objecting to and challenging the electoral votes from Ohio today in the joint session.
That's great. Let's just, Stephanie Tubbs
in the Republican-controlled House. What are they afraid of? Why can't we have a debate? Why can't we bring the issues to the table?
So this is Stephanie Tubbs Jones talking about why can't we have even a vote on a bill to make electronic voting machines transparent. I'm assuming that's what that was about. Anyhow, she's live on C-SPAN. And so tell us what happened, what broadly has been happening throughout the morning.
Well, this morning, Senator Boxer was willing to announce that she will be standing up and joining the House members led by Congressman Conyers in challenging the election. And Kim Gandy of the National Organization of Women made that announcement to the crowd in Lafayette Square Park. She was followed by a series of fiery speakers. I mean, this was an exciting rally. And David Cobb, the Green Party candidate, spoke and demanded to know where Senator Kerry was, and spoke of this as the very early stages of a new voting rights movement in this country, you know,
yes.
aimed at instant runoff voting, proportional representation, no more partisan administration of elections, no more black box voting. And it was an inspiring speech because he talked about being mocked, being ridiculed, being told it was impossible, and now having achieved something and starting to build some momentum. Congresswoman Maxine Waters was a tremendous speaker. She was at the rally. She's one of at least eight Congress members who will be challenging the Ohio results. And she called Dick Cheney illegitimate. She said she hopes that she's going to be able to speak in the joint session to let Vice President Cheney know that he is not a legitimate vice president. She said it's absolutely outrageous that you can get a printout for a lottery ticket and we can't get a record for a vote. We're going to stop letting them intimidate us. We're going to be in George Bush's face. The crowd.
The Democrats are getting a spine. This is amazing, David. The Democrats are getting a spine. And by the way, where is John Kerry?
John Kerry is in Baghdad,
yeah.
And Reverend Jesse Jackson announced the list of the senators who have grown spines and said Senator John Kerry is in Baghdad on a morning when we need him in Washington, and, quote, those who cannot lead today cannot lead in 2006 or 2008. This is the moment of truth.
Yeah.
And he went on to talk about building a coalition of blacks, of the white progressive movement of labor, and
this is
a
great.
Lot of
this
people
great.
Have tears in their eyes.
Yeah, this is great, and I have a feeling this is going to be a substantial problem for Senator Kerry, shall we say. David Swanson, media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, the ILCA, board member of Progressive Democrats of America. David's going to be checking in with us as the day goes on. We'll be back. Thanks.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions.
where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who have been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million-dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyers' fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by health care costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Live on like it's money. It makes a lot to say.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Big discussion going on right now.
That there will be a reversal of the Ohio electors. But the fact that someone has come forward and filed a lawsuit is one of the things that we are considering.
I believe this is Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who was on this program a couple of weeks ago.
However, having been a judge, I do lawsuits, and until the evidence is presented in the courtroom, then I'm looking, I have to take it as there could be another side. But there are other things that are being presented that people are showing that I witnessed myself. That would say
she's the congresswoman from Ohio.
Say to me that this, the irregularities in Ohio deserve a hearing in the House of Representatives.
Well said. Earlier there had been a question to her about, you know, what about the fact that so many people voted in ways that they had no track of the vote. And she points out something I've been saying on this program. And she points out something I've been saying on this program for 2 years now. I've been writing about for 3 years now. You find the archives going back to 2001, I believe, in on commondreams.org, at least 2002, anyway, early 2002. Why is it that you can get a receipt from your ATM machine, but you can't get a receipt from your voting machine? And they're made by the same company. And why is it that when Congressman Rush Holt, a guy with a PhD in physics, this guy is no dummy. He understands, you know, math. He understands. He's no dummy. Why is it that when this guy puts forward a bill that says, you know, I'm familiar with computers. Computers can be manipulated. It's fine to use computers. I mean, you know, it's just technology. It's fine to use computers to record votes, but at least have voter verified paper. So if the machine is keeping array in the event of a recount, why is it that for 2 years, a bill in the Senate introduced co-sponsored by Senator Clinton and a bill in the House introduced by Congressman Rush Holt and co-sponsored by Bernie Sanders and I believe more than 100 other members of the House has not even been allowed to come out of committee for discussion on the floor of the House of Representatives? Why is it? Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones again.
That was supposed to go to states, to go to communities to be able to deal with or educate voters. There was no regulation as to whether the Secretary of State could spend all the money or he or she was required.
She's talking about the have a money
down to the localities. I spent personal money trying to encourage the people in my congressional district to go out and vote, to tell them some of the things that they needed to know about an election because no money was being spent to inform or educate them on the issue.
Let me just say.
And on it goes. She's pointing out that this is the thing. In 2002. The Republicans pushed through Congress, pointing back to 2000, to the stolen election of 2000, where Al Gore actually got more votes in the state of Florida, even after the illegal, felonious voter fraud by Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris, where the president's brother committed a felony, in my opinion, and Catherine Harris as well, by purging the voting rolls. The first time that they had ever spent millions of dollars to hire a private company. Here we have another private corporation in our vote, right? A private corporation in our vote. And they went through and they said, okay, in Florida, felons can't vote. So let's find all the felons and knock them off the voting lists. Let's do it with a list of people who have been convicted of felonies in Texas. And when the first purge came through, and it wasn't, there weren't that many, Catherine Harris said, well, make the standards a little looser. If it's William F. Jones and he was born on January 9th, 1943, let's just make it any William F. Jones born in 1943. Well, that wasn't enough. So she said, okay, let's just make it any William F. Jones. Forget it. Say we got one born in 43 and one born in 72. Doesn't matter. And that wasn't enough. So she said, okay, if you got a Willie Jones and a William Jones, let's knock that guy off too. And they kept loosening the standards and loosening the standards to purge the voting rolls in the black communities, the African American communities in the state of Florida, to the point, and the NAACP still has this lawsuit going. And this is why you see so many African Americans in the House of Representatives, the Congressional Black Caucus out there yelling about this stuff. And the racists in right-wing talk radio try to portray it as, oh, it's just those, you know, they'll say that they're uppity or that they've got some sort of weird agenda or they're conspiracy nuts or what it could, you know, because they're part of the black community. This is the most racist, slimy kind of smear that has been going on now for 4 years, and the mass media in this country has been absolutely complicit in it, because the reality is, and it was only minimally covered on network television 4 years ago, the reality is that tens of thousands of African Americans who are law-abiding citizens and registered voters who had never committed a felony were removed from the voting lists in the state of Florida in the months before the November 2000 election so that they could not vote against Jeb Bush for governor, so they could not vote for Al Gore for president. And they were turned away at the polls. And they are still upset about it. And they damn well should be. And so you've got folks like Stephanie Tubbs Jones and John Conyers, who have both been on this program in the last couple of weeks, telling us, hey, what happened in Florida, the disenfranchisement of conspicuous Democratic constituencies. The African-American community votes 80 to 90% Democratic. It's predictable. So who do you go after? The disenfranchisement, a nice fancy word, the ripping off of the African-American community's vote in Florida was a crime. And then, of course, to really put the icing on the cake, when the New York Times, CNN, the Washington Post, the USA Today, UPI, AP, a consortium of news agencies got together and said, okay, we'll actually count those ballots that the Supreme Court stopped the counting of. You'll recall, it was George W. Bush who hired a trial lawyer to sue Al Gore to stop the vote in Florida. It was George W. Bush who initiated the lawsuit in the state of Florida in 2000. And in that lawsuit, William Rehnquist said irreparable harm would be done to George W. Bush if the vote in the entire state was counted. Rehnquist was right. The irreparable harm would have been that we would have known that Al Gore actually got more votes than George W. Bush did in the state of Florida. As Justice John Paul Stevens pointed out in his dissent, it was a 5-4 decision, you may remember, the irreparable harm was actually done to the people of the state of Florida and to democracy. This is absolutely outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And so now here we have finally, the Democratic Party is growing a spine. Let's hope that they make Howard Dean the head of the DNC, that they start throwing out these weasels from the DLC who want to say, oh, no, we just need to get in bed with the multinational corporations. That's the big problem. We're not taking enough money from them. We're not being nice enough to them. Let's have the Democratic Party once again be the party of the people. It was, after all, founded by Thomas Jefferson, even though the WhiteHouse.gov website won't tell you that. I mean, it's amazing. Go to WhiteHouse.gov. I ranted. I wrote an op-ed piece about this a year ago and ranted about it, and they added one sentence to the bio. Yeah, the White House did. They originally said, in the original bio of Thomas Jefferson, it said he was a Republican. He founded the Republican Party. Now, today, right now, you go to WhiteHouse.gov and you click on history and you click on presidents and you click on sort by date. And it will tell you, it still says Jefferson was a Republican, but it also says he founded the Democratic Republican Party. Doesn't point out that that's today's Democratic Party. In the 1830s, they dropped the word Republican. But then go to James Madison, the president who followed Jefferson. Jefferson's protege and probably one of his very closest friends in the world. And a distant relative of mine, I proudly say. And you will discover on WhiteHouse.gov that James Madison was a Republican. No, he wasn't. He was a Democrat. Look at James Monroe. He was a Republican. No, he wasn't. He was a Democrat. The White House has rewritten history on their own website, the history of our presidents. And kids all across the United States are doing their school reports by going to White House. I mean, you plug presidents and parties and things into Google. What do you get? You get WhiteHouse.gov. I don't know how I got off on that tangent. Well, I do know. There has been a concerted effort in this nation by the conservative corporate-owned media and right-wing radio and the massive intimidation machine associated with it. The various so-called think tanks that are really propaganda mills And the right-wing talk show hosts who are apologists for a worldview that doesn't even conform to what traditionally would be called conservative. Russell Kirk, Barry Goldwater, Everett Dirksen, Dwight Eisenhower would barf at these guys. They are fascists. They are modern-day fascists, corporatists. Take the government away from the people. When they say smaller government, it is code phrase for less protection for you and me and more for the multinational corporations. It's that simple. In fact, let me get back to this this email. Hang on just a second. Maybe we've... Okay. Line one is Ed in California. We were supposed to have an advisor to Dick Cheney on the program today. He was going to talk to us about Social Security. I have a feeling he made the mistake of looking at my website and decided not to call in. Ed in California, you're on the line.
Probably busy right now.
Yeah, it could be. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do next.
Hi, Tom.
Hey,
well,
Ed.
Just in reference to your, you know, kind of changing everything that happens, maybe you can put in perspective yesterday the tsunami thing and how the news channels were announcing that the kids were being abducted by sex predators in that country. What the heck are we doing?
Yeah.
We can't get relief into these countries, and yet the sexual predators, are we looking for fear again, Tom?
Well, I can tell you, I've worked in those countries, and the sex trade and the child sex trade in those countries is real. It is nowhere near as large a deal as is made out in the headlines. It's a very sexy thing, no pun intended, to talk about on the news, and they love talking about it. Turned out that one white kid, and that's, of course, they always focus on the white kids in the American media, that it was said that he had walked out of the hospital with a man. It turned out it wasn't the case. CNN corrected themselves yesterday.
Yeah, but we didn't care about the sex trade 2 weeks ago.
Well, actually, you know, George W. Bush included it in his State of the Union address last year. This is a real problem. I'm telling you, it's a real problem. It is not the largest problem in the area, but it is a real problem. It's a horrible problem, and it's one that, to their credit, the governments in the area have really cracked down on in the last decade. Have really cracked down on this. I mean, I used to, back in the 1980s, Louise and I owned a travel business in Atlanta. We started a company called International Wholesale Travel. It's still there, and we sold it in 86. And back then, there were sex tours that were running to Southeast Asia, and they were open about it. I mean, not that they were pedophile sex tours, but there was sex travel. They've pretty much put an end to all of that kind of stuff. But that, you know, that is real. But here's the larger issue. The larger issue, Ed, is we have had wall-to-wall coverage of the horrors of 100,000, 150,000 people dying in Southeast Asia. We are hearing the stories of the individual families. We are seeing the devastation that the tsunami wrought. And it was horrible, I'm telling you. I have been in disaster areas. I've been in war areas. I've been in disaster areas. Most of the disasters I've seen have been human-made. They've been the result of war or poverty. But nonetheless, I've been there and I've seen that. And it is reasonable for us to be horrified by these things. And do you know how many people died as a result of Vioxx?
It was 60,000.
The best guess right now is somewhere between 100 and 130,000. Have you heard? It's roughly the same number of people as have died from the tsunami so far. Now, of course, I'm guessing the tsunami number is going to push all the way up to a half a million. But nonetheless, over 100,000 people died of Vioxx. Have you heard one family interviewed on any network news about the loss of their breadwinner as a result of the Vioxx scandal?
How many died of ephedrine?
Yeah, or fenfen. You know,
53.
Yeah, I mean, you know, have you heard? Now, the reason why, of course, is because the pharmaceutical industry gives big bucks to the media for advertising, and they don't want to hurt them. The poor people in Asia are not giving big bucks to the industry.
Nope.
I mean, you look at the scandals that are going on with the defense contractors. They're paying hundreds of millions of dollars in fines because they're ripping off you and me. They're ripping off the American taxpayer, and yet we see ads on TV for defense contractors, and the same thing with the oil companies, and for oil companies, as if you and I wanted to buy an oil spar. As if you or I were going to go out and buy a new drilling, you know, a new oil rig. As if you and I were interested in buying a new fighter jet from Boeing or something like this. Why are these companies buying, spending millions of dollars, giving this all this money to the media for these ads? Might it be because they don't want the kind of coverage that we're seeing, you know, of the disaster in Southeast Asia to be applied to the disasters and the theft that's going on in the United States? Might it be? I mean, this is just another example.
How about the Sudan?
Yeah, and the Sudan as well. I mean, there's no money. On it goes. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. It's good to hear from you. It's a wild world we live in, folks. We just have to tell the truth. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have 6 sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud, and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Ira, who engineers our program, answers the phones and does all sorts of important functions around here, puts us up on the satellite, makes sure our streams are working. Ira Gravatt came over just a minute ago, and he says, what was that quote that we used last week about never give up? And this will be our quote for the day, officially. I had another one. We're going to change it. Thank you, Ira. Harriet Beecher Stowe, never give up, for that is just the time and place that the tide will turn. I never thought it would happen. I really and truly didn't think it would happen. We have now five senators, Clinton, Reid, Obama, Dodd, and Boxer, who have come out and said that they are signing on. In fact, here's Barbara Boxer.
Wait in line until nearly 4 a.m., 4 in the morning to vote, because there were only two machines. At Kenyon College, there were 1,300 voters. They needed 13 machines. They had two.
And she's going on and on about the problems with the vote. And she's Barbara Boxer kicking butt there. Hey, 1-866-889-8894. Rich in Chicago on the line. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Great. Hey, yeah, you just mentioned about the deaths as a result of the drugs that are out today. And my family, part of my family's from Indonesia, so everybody's been calling me, you know, are we okay with the tsunami and everything like that?
Right.
And at the beginning, I was saying thank you, but towards the end, I started thinking, man, 150,000 people potentially died of these drugs. The Congo's got up to 1 million people dying in the last 10 years. Sudan, many, many people dying.
2 million people in the last 2 years just in Zimbabwe.
It's unbelievable how certain things wake people up, but I think why people are touched by the tsunami is because so many Western people were there affected by it that they think it could have happened to them.
Yeah, plus...
So there's no attachment to Africa.
Plus, so, there's a great visual.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a great visual, and there is an attachment to Africa. We have a large African American community in the United States. It's just that they are not well represented in the media. They don't control the media. They aren't the media executives. They aren't the demographic that the advertisers want to reach. That's largely the white American.
Another thing too, I wrote every senator, but you know, only senators would receive my emails if I came from their state, which I thought was kind of a
Well,
sad.
They're increasingly having to do that just because of the volume, and that's why it's so important that when you do email your senator or your congressman or congresswoman, that you include your state and your local information so they do know it's from a constituent. Rich, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. We'll see how this plays out. Interesting times we live in, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman program where we run rings around the right wing every single day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the Progressive News Magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who have been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million-dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyers' fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by healthcare costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Am I the only one who thinks it's a teeny bit ironic that a visit to the Statue of Liberty, a world-renowned symbol of America's freedoms, now requires us visitors to surrender a piece of our freedom? The founders knew from hard experience with the British Crown that the protection of individual privacy from the prying eye of authorities was essential for any country striving to be the land of the free. Your personal matters and movements are supposed to be just that, personal, beyond the reach of either government or corporate snoops. But a creeping and increasingly creepy intrusion industry is pushing aggressively into our everyday lives, bolstered by government laws and money. Everything from your travel to your purchases are tracked by massive networks of computers. And now, they want not merely data, but little personal pieces of us. Our fingerprints, facial features, the iris patterns of our eyes. To go up into the Statue of Liberty, for example, you now must store your backpacks and such in public lockers. Fine. But rather than the uncomplicated, unobtrusive system of old, put your bag in a locker, drop a coin, take the key, and go, the new system requires that you touch an electronic reader that scans your fingerprint. This means that your own digit is now the key for getting back your bag. And the key for what else? Oh, say the operators, trust us. We don't send your print to the authorities. Really? How do we know that? Various government agencies are now authorized to seize our library records or banking information. Why should they not feel equally free to grab our biometric data? This is Jim Hightower saying, indeed, your digit is going commercial. Piggly Wiggly, Thriftway, and Kroger are among the corporations already beginning to ask that we use our fingerprints rather than credit cards to make purchases. It's taking away our privacy, one finger at a time.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, my friends. At this moment, the electoral vote is being counted in the joint session of the House and Senate. We will break as events require. But it's the second hour of our Thursday program, time for our regular Everything You Know Is Right. Could it be that what you know isn't what you thought you know? Is it possible? Is it possible that even possible that everything you know is wrong?
The electoral vote of the state of Alabama seems to be regular in form and authentic. And it appears therefrom that George W. Bush of the state of Texas received nine.
Oh, that was an interesting juxtaposition. I'm playing C-SPAN on the same machine I'm playing my music on. Anyhow, everything that was our Everything You Know Is Wrong theme music. And here is Michael Horn. Michael Horn's latest appearance on Alan Combs' nationally broadcast show. Produced a few raised eyebrows. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome. You have been in contact with Edward Billy Meyer of Switzerland, the only scientifically proven UFO contact case in the world, or so you claim, or he claims. And you suggest that there's a direct connection between petroleum and gas extraction from the Earth and the increased frequency and intensity of earthquakes and volcanic activities, hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods. Before we get to that, and I'd like to hear your take on that. You were telling me just a few minutes ago during the break that this fellow also his psychic abilities, as it were, that he had also had a specific prediction about the American election. You want to lay that on our listeners?
Yes, let me clarify a couple things. One, I'm going to say allegedly with certain things because while we have proved that the case is real, And we'll let your listeners know how they can, you know, argue that one or check it out for themselves. But I don't claim that everything in the case is true because I haven't been able to prove it all. So I call some of the information speculative until and if it can either be shown to be true or false. In the case of what I was telling you off air regarding the U.S. election, what I got a quick translation from someone, because all of Meyer's information is in German unless and until it gets translated into English. Here's what the sum of it was. With a face-to-face contact that he claimed he had again on, because he's been having them for 62 years, he says, on September 9th, a contact with one of these people, and these are human beings, they're not little gray guys, he was told that George Bush would win the election again by fraudulent means, according to them, and that in this case, the states of Florida and Ohio would be pivotal to the fraud, that there was something about, and this is why I'm waiting for the translation, there was something about 400,000 votes held back in computers. I don't have anything more than that little rough translation blip. They also told him at the time, September 9th, that Yasser Arafat would not live beyond the end of November. This is kind of typical of some of the ways in which they give him information. It's not psychic, if you will. It's face-to-face, and he transcribes his contacts, and then other people there simply date them. And
these people, Michael Horn, are from where?
They claim to live in the direction of what we see from Earth as the Pleiades star system, but not in the Pleiades star system we see, because it's an uninhabitable young blue sun system. They claim that they are about a second and a half outside of our, or in an altered time-space configuration. I'm not a scientist. I can't explain
how that. How can you say that this is a scientifically confirmed UFO contact?
Sure. Well, let me give you, there's two categories of evidence in the case. There's, and then it's broken down. There are five specific categories of physical evidence, and they are photographs, and all of these, all of the hard evidence was produced or presented by Meyer between 75 and 1980, maybe 81 at the outside. Although Meyer took photographs in India in 1964, which we also have, his official contacts, quote-unquote, when he started to publish it all, started in 75. He produced 1,200 clear daytime photos of up to four of the craft in sequence moving across the sky, eight film segments shot on 8mm film before video, one video when video cameras became available, sound recordings made on cassette machines outdoors in front of up to 17 witnesses from around the country.
Okay, let's just say that there's a whole bunch of stuff.
It's been scientifically checked.
Yeah, you need to continue.
It's on the website if people want.
That's fine. Okay, what's the website, by the way?
Thank you. It's three dubs and a dot. They fly. T-H-E-Y-F as in Frank, L-Y.
Theyfly.org. Okay, and this is about Edward Billy Meyer of Switzerland. We're talking with Michael Horn. Meyer suggests that there's a direct connection between the tsunami and petroleum and gas extraction. Tell me about that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Tom. I missed you.
No, I said tell me about that.
Oh, sure. Basically, what his information has presented to him, actually since 56 and then officially in 75 on, environmental damage that would be directly linked to human activities. We were told as far back as 56 in this case that the connection between the ozone layer, the damage to the ozone, and the other accompanying damages, genetic mutations, food chain, etc., was linked not only to internal combustion engines, but to atomic bomb testing.
Yeah.
And when we get to the tsunami and that type of thing, they told them starting in about 75, 76, that while earthquakes and floods and all this stuff are part and parcel of the planet, we would have an increase in frequency and intensity as we approach this millennium, and that a huge contributing factor was going to be the decades of extraction of petroleum and natural gas from the Earth, because we have upset the balance of the plates by removing this buffering, cushioning substance that the Earth produces over billions of years.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, it doesn't take somebody from outer space to say that, Michael. We're talking with Michael Horn. Michael, why do you think that these folks for these space aliens that you say are so well documented care about our presidential election, for example? I mean,
it would go to the heart of the information that they have given him, saying, look, you folks are going down the wrong road at a high rate of speed. The only hope for your world is for the people to take back the power from those who have either been put in power with your complicity or who have usurped it, who do not have either the best interests of the people or the planet in mind, and who are going to lead you to a third world war with certainty unless and until people wake up and start.
But, I mean, do they care because they want to occupy our planet, but they don't want it to be radioactive, or do they care?
I would think that if that were the case,
good guys,
they've done that long ago. No, I would say that the information in the case is that they are ancestrally connected to us, going back eons. Their own forefathers, in some cases, being our forefathers. Their own forefathers, in some cases, being referred to by them as the some of the deities of the various holy books of antiquity.
I assume, and Michael Horn, that you're familiar with the Scientology assertion that, the highest secret that you can learn in Scientology, that you spend years and years and hundreds of thousands of dollars and you finally work your way all the way up to the top and get right up there with John Travolta, and you learn the top secret, and that is that 10,000 years ago, people from another planet came here and seeded the planet Earth, and that they're going to come back in 10,000 years, which is more or less now, and collect all those people who are clear, that is, mentally enlightened. And Scientology claims to tell you how to become clear so that when these aliens show up, they can whisk you away. Is this the same variety of folks?
No, that's another kind of savior proposition. Their chronologies are in the infancy compared to the chronologies presented in this case as to human visitation, habitation. There's nothing divine about these folks. They may be more advanced than we are. They're not here to save us. They're not here to interfere with us. If anything, they have tried for the past, let's say, 50 years or so to obliquely insert into our world, with questionable results, information that we might then, quote-unquote, discover, so that we might, if there's any saving to be done, save ourselves.
Okay, good plan. Michael Horn, thank you very much for sharing this with us. Once again, the website was?
TheyFly.com.
TheyFly.com. Michael Horn, thank you so much for being with us. I do appreciate it. Our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, 15 minutes past the hour. Now, if you thought that was weird, if you thought that was odd, let me share with you a couple of other folks who are channeling. Here, for example, the inestimable, is that the real word? In any case, Pat Robertson. And Pat, what happened to Pat? Oh, no. Don't tell me. I have somehow...
He's going to surge upward, as I heard from the Lord.
There we go.
Again,
okay,
ladies and gentlemen,
hang on just a second. We'll start it once again. When I paused my C-SPAN thing, you can't do too many things on one computer.
Again, 2005 is going to be a year of extraordinary prosperity.
How do you know that, Pat?
For this nation and for CBN.
Oh, for the Christian Broadcasting Network. That's great. How do you know that?
American stock market is going to surge upward, if I heard from the Lord. And
you heard it from the Lord. Interesting. So now we've heard from the UFO folks, and I wonder what else the Lord said.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, don't go out and buy stock on my recommendation, but that's what I feel in my heart.
But on God's recommendation.
The Lord was saying it's going to be a super good year. Well, the Lord has some very encouraging news.
Oh, isn't this great? Pat Robertson, here's a guy who's a multimillionaire, has millions of Americans listening to him, We'll just continue.
For George Bush.
Oh, the Lord has good news for George Bush. See, the space aliens have bad news for us about George Bush. The Lord has good news for us about George Bush.
You know, some years ago, as I was praying, the Lord made it clear that Ronald Reagan's second term was going to be filled with scandal and problems. And lo and behold, it happened that way. And it's to my sorrow.
So Pat is a prophet, just like this space alien guy. He can tell us about things in the past that he accurately predicted.
But what I heard was that Bush is now positioned to have victory after victory, and that his second term is going to be one of triumph, which is pretty strong stuff.
Wow, I guess.
But that he'll have Social Security reform passed, that he'll have tax reform passed.
Oh, isn't this great? The Lord wants Social Security reform passed. We saw today in the Wall Street Journal, front page of the Wall Street Journal, an article about how one of the advisors to Dick Cheney has sent out a memo to Republicans on the inside saying, we got to cut benefits. We got to cut benefits by as much as a third. So the Lord, apparently, according to Pat Robertson, is in favor of setting a changing Social Security from an insurance system that protects those who fall through the cracks, that protects the poor among us, the weak among us. 37% of Social Security recipients are not even retired workers. They are the widows of retired workers, or they are children who have lost their parents from catastrophic accident or disease. They are the poor who have fallen through the cracks. But Pat Robertson says the Lord says, hey, screw them. Let's instead just go with a nice retirement program for the rich. Let's convert it into a private retirement program.
I will remove judges from the Supreme Court quickly.
The Lord says he's going to remove judges. Now, those are lifetime appointments. If you remove someone who has a lifetime appointment, it sounds like you have to kill them. Pat Robertson predicting that God is going to kill people.
And their successors will refuse to sanction the attacks on religious faith.
Remarkable. And the successors of the folks that God kills on the Supreme Court, according to Pat Robertson, are going to be right up there with Reverend Moon. Here's a quote from George W. Bush. Well, actually, let me share you with that one with you right after this break. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver.
Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Come heed me, good brothers, come here one and all. Don't brag about standing or you'll surely fall. You're shining your light and shine it you should. But you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good.
And welcome back. Pat Roberts, perfect. George W. Bush, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then he instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. And now I'm determined to solve the problem in the Middle East. Quote, end quote, George W. Bush. So we have heard now from space aliens, we have heard from God via Pat Robertson, and we have heard from God via George W. Bush. Now let's hear from Ellen Ratner. Hey, Ellen.
Well, I'm certainly not God, but I certainly have been sitting here at the Senate hearings for Gonzales, and I actually just ran into Professor Harold Coe, who is going to be testifying this afternoon, and he's on the right side of this. But I think the two or three things, if I have to boil it down to quickies here, that shocked me was that one of the things in Gonzales's opening statements was that because of the Patriot Act, there has not been a domestic attack here since 9/11.
Because of the Patriot Act.
That's right.
And did he offer any evidence of that?
No.
So he was making the same claim that that Ashcroft made, basically.
That's right. Yeah. Then Senator Cole from Wisconsin asked him whether he opened up for a permissive environment, and he said that he did not see that. Particularly, he referred to the day shift versus the evening shift in Abu Ghraib. But this is there are two other sort of amazing questions. One asked about this August memo where there was discussion about suspending Geneva. Senator Cole asked him whether it was theoretically possible for Congress to essentially, what about suspending, suspending laws? And he answered, this is Gonzales, that it was theoretically possible for Congress to pass a law that is unconstitutional by the Senate or House, and that the president may declare it unconstitutional. And he said it was that this, again, he reiterated, that this theoretically may be possible that a law may be unconstitutional, which one Cole said, well, would the president just ignore a law? Gonzales answered, well, be asking for a hypothetical, it's hypothetically, but we don't want to ignore the courts. Well, how does a president decide that a law is unconstitutional?
So,
could the president go right to the Supreme Court and ask them to define a law?
It sounds to me like Gonzales is saying that the president has the same right that the Supreme Court has, that John Marshall claimed for the Supreme Court in 1803 in Marbury versus Madison, to interpret the Constitution. And I don't see that anywhere in the Constitution. I'm sorry. The Constitution does not say that the president has the right to determine what is or is not constitutional. But Judge Gonzales seems to think so, eh?
Absolutely. There were other two places that he had couldn't really remember, Tom. And one of the things that he couldn't remember is what his opinion was about that memo. He somehow could not remember what he thought about the memo.
He doesn't remember what he thought about torture?
No, he just doesn't remember what his exact thoughts were on that memo.
I'm sorry. That's like my forgetting the day that one of my children was born or something. I mean, that was a big deal. I mean, that was a huge big deal.
It seems totally.
What's this guy covering up?
Amazing to me.
What's he covering up, Ellen?
Obviously, his viewpoint and his opinion to the president. Schumer then also asked him about the judges that the White House has put forth, and he said, you nominated a judge who doesn't believe in real zoning laws. That's 1890s.
Huh. That's remarkable. Well, Ellen, thank you for the report from the Gonzalez hearings. By the way, the objections were just registered in the Senate by Stephanie Tubbs Jones and Barbara Boxer, and so the House and Senate have gone into joint session to discuss the Ohio situation. That should be entertaining.
Yeah, very.
So we'll get your thoughts on that tomorrow. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks,
you
Ellen. 29 minutes past the hour.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go. I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who've been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million-dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyers' fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by healthcare costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
From being kept silent, it is imperative that we object to the counting of Ohio's electoral votes. What happened in Ohio and Cuyahoga County? There are just over 1 million registered voters in Cuyahoga County, which of course includes my congressional district. Registration increased approximately 10%.
Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs
Jones. The beauty of the 2004 election was that more people were fully prepared to exercise their right to vote. However, on election day, hundreds and even thousands of individuals went to the voting polls and were denied the opportunity. In my own county, where citizen volunteers put forth a Herculean effort to register, educate, mobilize, and protect, there were long lines, 4 to 5 hour waits. Election Protection Coalition testified that more than half of the complaints about long lines they received came from Columbus and Cleveland, where a huge proportion of the state's Democratic voters live. One entire polling place in Cuyahoga County had to shut down at 9:25 a.m. on election day because there were no working machines. On provisional ballot,
she only has another minute to speak.
Overall provisional ballot rejection of 32%. Rejection rates for provisional ballots in African-American precincts and wards in Cleveland averaged 37%, and in some as high as 51%. Significant flaws in registration process and procedures. Initial research identified at least 600 individuals purged from the Cuyahoga County voting rolls without a due process. Cuyahoga County analysis of 10,900 voter applications showed that almost 3,000 were never entered. Address updates received but never updated. Mistakes in entering addresses.
Gentlelady's expired.
I thank the opportunity to be heard, and I thank
Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who's been a guest on this program just now, speaking before the House of Representatives. She challenging the vote of the electors for the state of Ohio from her own state of Ohio. A challenge which was co-signed by Senator Barbara Boxer. So now the House and Senate are in joint session to hear these objections. It's interesting. I'm seeing it on C-SPAN here, and I'm seeing a lot of empty seats. I wonder how many Republicans are actually showing up for this thing. This is going to be fascinating to dissect. We'll get some more information on it. Let's go right now to David Swanson, the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org. Hey, David. We heard when we heard live. Actually, I heard it during the break. Dick Cheney, presiding over the Senate or over the joint session, saying, "Is there an objection?" Stephanie Tubbs Jones saying, "Yes." He says, "Do you have a senator?" She said, "Yes." Barbara Boxer. He said, "Has it been signed?" She said, "Yes, it's there." And then he said, "Are there any other objections?" And nobody stood up and nobody said anything. Why was that?
Well, they only needed to have one signatory from each House of Congress, and then the joint session splits, and the House members went to the House, and the senators went to the Senate.
So it would have just been overkill?
I'm sorry?
It would have just been overkill if...
No, that's the way the rules work. The House is in the House, and for the past 5 minutes, Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones has been speaking. Now the second member of the House is speaking. In the Senate for the past 5 minutes, Barbara Boxer had been speaking. Now the second senator is speaking. And each member in each house is limited to 5 minutes, and the entire debate in each house is limited to 2 hours.
Right.
So that's why they are no longer in joint session. But there are at least eight members of the House and five members of the Senate supporting the objection to the Ohio vote. And there may be many more than that. We'll see.
Yeah, fascinating. And there is no way 248 people or whatever the 230, whatever the number of members of the House of Representatives there are these days, can each speak for 5 minutes in a two-hour period. How do they decide who gets to speak? Is this something that good old Republican Denny Hastert figures out?
Well, probably so. I mean, as far as the Democrats, they have leadership, and they have a list of, I know pretty well who the first five and the first eight are going to be.
Yeah.
In terms of the Republicans, they they'll make their own decisions.
Well, in the House right now, they have a Republican speaking, Representative Deborah Price of Ohio. She's a Republican. No doubt she is not speaking in favor of the challenge. So,
right, maybe in the Senate as well.
Yeah, maybe they're going to do Democrat-Republican. David, stick on the line here for a minute. Let's take a couple of phone calls. We have some folks who've been waiting. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was wondering, is this a challenge, is this more for this election or for the 2006-2008 election, like voter reform?
This is not going to change the outcome of this election. There's just no way it will. Because,
that's what I figured.
Yeah. But what it will do is it will, what their hope is that it will out Ken Blackwell as a criminal. Or as, you know, however you want to define it, somebody who tried to steal an election and the Republican Party.
Criminal sounds fine.
Yeah, criminal sounds fine to me, too. And raise this issue and hopefully get some meaningful election reform done. David, David Swanson, what were the election reforms that David Cobb from the Green Party was talking about there was a broad consensus on?
Well, he was talking about instant runoff voting, proportional representation, nonpartisan administration of our elections, so no more Ken Whitewells, as people have been calling him, and no more black box voting with no paper trail.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a lot of people are hoping, and I think it's a reasonable hope, is going to come out of this is some identity for the Democratic Party and some movement at the grassroots in favor of something and setting not just Ken Blackwell but George W. Bush and Dick Cheney aside as criminals.
Yeah. Putting them on notice, outing them, as it were. Tony, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Steve in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Steve. What's
Hi,
on your
Tom,
mind?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Steve?
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for being such a champion of democracy. I really appreciate you. I'm a pro-life Christian, evangelical, who just happens to be a Democrat, okay?
Welcome to the party. That's wonderful.
Well, I many times at my church and around my circle of friends, I'm quite a minority, and actually my faith is often questioned because of the fact I'm a Democrat, but I kind of take that with a grain of salt. I was just wondering, how do you feel about the possibility of a pro-life Democrat running for the presidency in 2008? The reason I ask you that is because I feel like, catch my breath here, I'm a little bit nervous. I feel like we're really against behind the eight ball in terms of catch-up. When I say catch-up, I mean we are trying to play catch-up with the Republican people.
Yeah. Steve, can you hold on for just a second?
Sure.
Let's talk about this, but I want to let David go. I'm gonna put you on hold for just a second here. And David, you know, you've given us your update on what's happening right there. You're going to call back next hour and give us another one?
I'd be glad to if you want me to.
That would be great. And, you know, keep us up to date on what's going on there. Any other factoids relative to the vote that we need to talk about?
Well, I think we're going to all watch what plays out on C-SPAN, and
we'll see what happens in
60 minutes.
Okay, well, in that 60 minutes, if you can figure out how it is that the House and Senate decide who gets to speak for those 5 minutes, I would love to find out.
I will do that.
Can you make that your mission?
Sure.
Okay, great. Look forward to hearing from you shortly.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Let's go back to Steve in Grand Rapids. Steve, here's first of all, let me just ask a couple of questions.
Sure.
I am pro-life in as much as I think, you know, abortion should be absolutely the last resort. I'm totally in favor of people carrying babies to term and adopting them out.
Yeah.
I'm totally in favor of caring for children once they're born.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of good prenatal health. I'm in favor of a national health care system that keeps everybody who's born alive.
Yeah.
And I'm opposed to the death penalty. Those, in my mind, are things that are pro-life.
Amen.
And the Supreme Court, and frankly, in my opinion, the Supreme Court overstepped themselves in Roe v. Wade and actually did make law. The Supreme Court should not be making law, in my opinion. But in Roe v. Wade, and here's where they overstepped themselves. What they should have said was, women have an absolute right to privacy. We're going to reverse the 1873 Bradwell versus State case, in which the Supreme Court ruled that women did not have access to the Bill of Rights, that women have access, women have the right of privacy, and that means, therefore, either that they do or they don't have the right to abortion. In other words, that it should have just been black or white. Instead, what the court said was that if a fetus is viable, that is, if it can live outside the mother's womb, then it cannot be aborted. It's against the law. So it's been a crime ever since 1973 for there to be a late-term abortion, unless the mother's life was at risk. It has always been a crime, and the anti-abortion folks have really demagogued this thing. And the Supreme Court also said that there were different standards for the first and second trimester because there were different levels of viability there. And so, you know, that debate has been joined. Here's my question.
Yes.
When you say that you are a pro-life Democrat, I am wondering, are you one of the folks who believes that we should do everything we can to minimize the number of abortions, to discourage abortions, to eliminate the need for abortions, you know, more birth control, or do you think that it should be against the law for a woman to get an abortion if the fetus is not viable? In other words, in conformance with the original Supreme Court rules, you've got something you've got something growing there that is not yet conscious.
Right.
Is that your position?
Well, that's a deep question, and it's philosophical, it's religious, it's political, though I don't think it should be political. I would say yes to both your questions. I believe everything should be done to minimize them, and I also do believe, And this is my opinion, Tom, and I respect yours very much. And I would just say that I believe that that life begins at conception. In other words, in essence, I would say abortion is murder.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, this has been a debate that's been going on for a long, long time. And for most of the history of the Catholic Church, for example, the belief was that the soul entered the body when the baby took its first breath.
Sure.
And it wasn't until the 1800s, as I recall, that the church decided that the soul entered the body at the moment of conception.
Right.
The only reason
I ask you that is because the only reason I didn't even really assume or anticipate getting into any type of discussion in terms of when life begins and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I just think
I'm just curious.
As we're really, as Democrats, the people
Pro-life.
We're really up against it when it comes into elections because the people that get out and vote, you probably know better than me, but I think I don't know if it's like 20, 30, 40%. The people in my religious background, they are dead set against voting for anybody who is pro-life.
Yeah,
I mean,
I understand.
Or pro-choice.
Pro-choice.
And they the people that, you know, all the church people, I mean, they don't care if it was a bum on the street, they would vote for him over Albert Einstein if Einstein was a pro-choice Democrat.
Yeah, yeah.
They would vote for the bum off the street because he's pro-life.
Yeah, well,
of people have that mindset.
Yeah, the reason I ask this question is because I think that what has happened is that what we have is a situation that may or may not have a whole lot of gray areas in it.
Right.
And I mean, there are, for example, some, in fact, a significant number of people who argue that if a woman is carrying a fetus and that fetus is malformed and has been disturbed or, you know, is malformed in such a way that it's continuing to grow will kill the mother, that it still should be illegal to abort the fetus.
I don't go that far.
Well, then there are people who would say that you're not truly pro-life.
Well, so be it.
And see, that's the question. And that's why I brought up the discussion, because you said, you know, can a pro-life Democrat run? I think that, you know, there are a number of Democrats who are sort of in this gray middle area. And that's the real issue. Yeah, in answer to your question, yes, I think a pro-life Democrat can run, and
I think you'd have a good chance.
And in fact, what we have, but what I think we have to do is redefine pro-life and pro-choice, because these words are not really what they mean. I mean, on either side,
they're ambiguous.
Well, to a large extent, or they have been claimed by extremists on both ends.
I just think that we, as you know, Democrats would really open up our opportunities. Pro-choice people are much more open-minded. They will vote for a Republican or a Democrat. Pro-life people do not vote Democrat. Yeah. And I'm an exception. I'm one out of a million, or maybe not quite that many. But I guarantee I'm a very small minority.
Yeah, and you are also against capital punishment, I assume. If you're
yes,
pro-life.
I am.
Yeah. So you're not you don't fit the profile of the total absolute right wing.
I guess not.
And see, this is the thing. This kind of pseudo morality that the right wing has used to try and divide us from each other, to try and
all they're doing
is posturing.
George Bush is not.
George Bush executed 130 people. How can he call himself pro-life?
He said himself before the 2000 election, "I'm not out to change Roe versus Wade." He has a wife who's pro-choice. He doesn't.
He got an abortion for his girlfriend when he was in his 20s.
All he's doing is catering to the Christian right. You know it, and I know it. The Christian right doesn't know it because they're too blinded.
Or they know it, and they're willing to ignore it because he's going to give them what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
And see, that's where I think that the debate, I mean, my take on this is that this has been an incredibly divisive thing.
Yeah.
If Roe v. Wade gets reversed, it doesn't mean the end of abortion. It goes to the states. Right. And you know, we may be in for another educational period, just like we are right now with George Bush being president. A whole lot of people got woken up who I think, frankly, were asleep and probably would have stayed asleep if Al Gore had gotten president and wouldn't have seen the creeping rise of fascism. I remember, however, when abortion was illegal. I was a teenager in those years, and I knew a girl in my school who had an illegal abortion and died from it. And I frankly don't want to see those days come back.
Amen.
As much as I'm opposed to abortion, I don't want to see those days come back.
I'm with you, Tom.
Well, if you're with me, then you're not pro-life, you're pro-choice. Steve, thanks for the call. We're out of time.
I
appreciate it. 10 minutes after the hour, or before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more involved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Debbie Stabenow from Michigan right now speaking on C-SPAN, but not on CNN! This is one of the most historic events in the history of the United States. One of the most to challenge the electors of a... This hasn't... I am sputtering. I mean, this is like the contested election of 1800. And CNN... We flipped to CNN and... we're talking about cell phones here. What is wrong with these people? I just asked the folks in our chat room for the C-SPAN phone number. If anybody gets it for me, I'm going to give it to you on the air, and you can call and say, hey, C-SPAN, there's news happening in the U.S. Congress. Let's have some live coverage of it. In the meantime...
That many in our Latino community feel disenfranchised from our political process. Our democracy depends
Grace
on...
Grace Napolitano, Democrat of California.
...and a deep and abiding faith in our electoral system.
This coming out, the congressman, the congresswoman in this case, and senators speaking out. Well, it must be time for a Berlusconi alert. Yes, indeed. Silvio Berlusconi, first he buys a radio station, then a TV station, then another radio station, then another TV station, then a newspaper, then a network, and pretty soon he owns 90% of all the radio and TV stations in Italy. Something I think would be fond of the heart of George W. Bush. And so he decides to run himself for prime minister. And guess what? Owning all the media, he wins! And here are Berlusconi alert for today from The Guardian in Rome. A 28-year-old bricklayer has gained cult status among ordinary Italians after he threw a camera tripod at Silvio Berlusconi on New Year's Eve, leaving Berlusconi with a bruise in the back of his head. Now, I saw this news story on New Year's Day, and I said to Louise, we got to clip this out and make it a Berlusconi alert. And she says, what, a guy throws a tripod at Berlusconi? That's not enough for a Berlusconi. Well, here's the rest of the story, to paraphrase Paul Harvey. Roberto Del Basco told journalists he could not stop himself. He could not stop himself. He just wasn't able. Oh, by the way, the CNN switchboard asked for the newsroom. Area code 404-827-1500. Area code 404-827-1500. Bless you, neo-constipated in our chat room. I do appreciate that. CNN, call him up and say, why aren't you covering some real news? Anyhow, this guy who threw the tripod at Berlusconi, he has become the Che Guevara of his times. The Sierra della Sierra newspaper, half of Italy would have liked to have done what he did, and maybe worse. Seasonal text and email messages whirled around Italy saying things like, "Greetings, this is the year of the tripod, and glory in heaven and comprehension on earth to willing tripod maniacs. More tripods for all!" Berlusconi, you could say, is not the most popular emperor Italy has ever had, but he does control the media, so you don't hear much negative about him these days. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the real free speech zone.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who have been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyers' fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by healthcare costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Buckle your seatbelts, buckaroos! Apparently, the airlines feel they've not done enough to make air travel a stress-filled and downright irritating experience, so now they're pushing a plan to let some cell phone jerk sit in the seat next to you and yammer nonstop at high volume about nothing for 2 or 3 hours as you wing across the country. That's a definition of hell. And it's a surefire setup for some serious air rage at 30,000 feet. On practically every flight these days, you'll encounter cell phone maniacs barking self-importantly into their little chunks of plastic. These callers seem to think that the rest of us will consider them hotshots for calling from a plane. It's pathetic. And the more pathetic they are, the louder they talk, annoying passengers for several rows around. I've seen passengers come close to blows with these pretentious prattlers. The saving grace has been that the noise ceases once the plane takes off, for cell phones can interfere with the pilot's communications and must be shut off during flight. But the airlines are now seeking regulatory approval for new technology that will let the noisy ones natter into their cell phones clear across the country. Bob, this is Jack. I'm on the plane to Portland, so this is a good time to go over our third quarter sales figures. Beatrice, hi, it's Nancy. I'm in the air. Can you believe it? Have I told you about my bladder condition? What, you can't hear me? Okay, I'll speak louder. It's going to get ugly up there if this thing goes through. Yet the airlines see it as a moneymaker, so the Bushites are pushing to okay the change, freeing airlines to make a buck on air rage. This is Jim Hightower saying, I could be one of those ragers. A few hours of flight time is one of the last sanctuaries of cell phone silence in our harried world. Must we fill it with infuriating noisemakers just because it's technologically possible? To oppose this intrusion, contact the FCC's public comments page at www.fcc.gov.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. This is Frank Lautenberg, Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, talking before the Senate about voting irregularities in Ohio.
A Republican deviated from election law by severely restricting voters' access to provisional ballots. He went so far as to reject voter registration applications based on paperweight and texture.
Talking about Ken Blackwell.
Those actions and his complete unwillingness to cooperate with Congressman Conyers' investigation are deeply troubling. His actions are troubling particularly because he didn't just serve as the chief election official.
Blackwell, the criminal.
He also co-chaired the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio. Now, allowing a state official to oversee a federal election and simultaneously serve as a partisan campaign official for one of those candidates in that
just like Catherine Harris.
Is a blatant conflict of interest, and we've got to put a stop to it. And that's why later this month I'm going to be introducing the Federal Election Integrity Act.
Yeah, so we'll see where this one goes. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. We will get a report at the bottom of the hour from David Swanson of the ILCA about what's going on in Washington, D.C. This is remarkable. I mean, this is history in the making. CNN giving it a little blip, finally, after I suspect a bunch of our listeners called them. I don't know why CNN isn't doing live coverage of what's going on in the Senate or the House right now. I mean, I'm just astounded. You have to go back to 1800 or possibly 1870, I forget which year it was. 1878, I think, was the election. In any case, the one that led to the 12th Amendment. Well, actually, that was the election of 1804 or 1800 that led to the 12th Amendment. But the one that led to the more modern rules on this, the ability to challenge, one senator, one congressman. This is just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing that we have this challenge taking place, that a senator, in this case Barbara Boxer, although she has been joined by Senators Clinton, Reid, Obama, Dodd, and of course herself Boxer, or so I understand. But it only took one signature, and it was Boxer. And now Frank Lautenberg talking. It's
to restore confidence that our elections are fair and the results are accurate.
Yeah, good plan, Senator Lautenberg. Good plan. Because, people are talking about wearing orange, like they did in the Ukraine. This is just remarkable. We need to clean this up. Why is it that you can use a Diebold machine to put money into the bank and get a receipt, but when you use a Diebold machine to vote, after Wally O'Dell, the chairman of Diebold, wrote a fundraising letter to Republicans in Ohio saying that he was going to bring in the state of Ohio for George W. Bush, when you use a Diebold machine to vote, you can't get a receipt. If somebody could explain that to me, I would love to hear it. In fact, if anybody can give me a reasonable explanation for that, I will provide you with we'll run a contest. I'll give you a free copy of any one of my books that you want. Why the Republicans in the House and the Senate for 2 years now have fought Rush Holt, Congressman Rush Holt, and Senator Hillary Clinton in the legislation that they have put forward, which has said that if you vote on an electronic voting machine, the machine must produce a paper ballot which you can hold in your hand and look at and say, yes, that's how I voted, and then you put it in the box, and that's the backup. If there's ever a doubt, if there's ever a dispute, why would the Republicans be so opposed to this for 4 years now? Why is it that for the first time in the history of the United States, our exit polls, starting around the year 2000, actually starting about 2 years before that, 98, but big time in the year 2000 with the presidential election, the first time in history, that our exit polls showed one candidate winning, whereas the electronic voting machines that produce no paper trail show the other candidate winning? The big one in my mind on this is Max Cleland in Georgia. There were none of the machines in Georgia were producing a paper trail, and all the polls showed Max Cleland won. Before, afterwards, all the polls showed he won that I can find, and yet the electronic voting machines said he lost. And then Bev Harris goes to the Diebold website and finds this FTP backdoor and finds a file in there called Rob Georgia, and in that file, all the statistics, all the raw voting stuff and the patches for the machines for the state of Georgia. And it's like, what is going on? What has happened to our democracy?
home our moral authority.
Here's Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton.
I take that very seriously because freedom is our most precious value. And we have for 225 plus years worked to form a more perfect union. At first, not everybody was permitted to vote in our own country. But through constitutional changes, a civil war, and a civil rights movement, we expanded the franchise. This year, we will celebrate the anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And it will be an opportunity for us to take a look at this.
She's giving a speech. She's not. We'll come back to Hillary in a few minutes. I'm sorry. It's just a speech. Hey, I took Tom's advice and threw my hat in the ring, says David Wagner. He's decided to run for office. Threw my hat in the ring for a local office. We have more elections here in Texas than you can shake a voting machine at. Early voting starts later this month. Dog catcher wasn't open, so I'm running for a position on the board of directors of the San Antonio River Authority. And handbasket.org, handbasket.org. is his website. He says, please let me know what you think of what I have so far. And he's trying to make this thing work. Elect David Wagner to the San Antonio River Authority to represent Bexar County at large for neighborhood improvement and water management. I mean, here's somebody who is actually saying, oh, okay, let's do it. Let's actually... You know, you've been saying, well, you know, you should get involved. This is a guy who's actually doing it. I am so impressed. This is just great. This is just absolutely great. We need more folks like this. And so I have to say, I'm going to, as soon as I stop Hillary here, here we go. This will be our jolly good fellow, David Wagner. San Antonio River Authority can do more for you. Immediate flood and drought relief, lower water bills, lower taxes, nearby parks, local economic development and jobs, better neighborhoods, increased property values, cleaner water, cooler summertime temperatures. He says, as your elected representative, I will help direct the San Antonio River Authority to do more for you and your neighborhood. Well done, David Wagner. Glad to see you jumping into the race. It is so important that we get involved, that we, the people, start getting involved. The people of the United States. It goes way beyond just any sort of political thing. It has vanished. Where'd it go? Here it is, right here. I wanted to get back to this letter. I got this letter. I started this in the first hour, never finished it because we got into this whole election thing, and it went off the edge. But I do want to get back to it, and in the process, hang on just a second here. Trying to do six things at once. In the process of these issues, this fellow, he says, I'm a conservative who's recently discovered the Tom Hartman program. And he says, I want to run through some of the issues and, get to take on it. He says, I see the left in America as offering greater choice only on abortion and swearing on broadcast TV. And then he goes on to say, and see, this is an example of how well indoctrinated, how after 20 years, 20 plus years of right-wing think tanks, billions of dollars spent by Joe Coors and his good buddies, Richard Mellon Scaife, all these guys, billions of dollars spent, right-wing think tanks, right-wing talk radio, the corporate takeover of the media, right-wing commentators, the op-ed pieces being published day after day after day in newspapers all across the country, that people have come to this very, very, very narrow understanding. And this is a fellow in good faith saying that, to this very, very, very narrow understanding. And this is a fellow in good faith saying this. He's saying, conservatives support school choice, allowing me to choose how to spend my own money, whether to buy a gun, and how to provide for my own retirement. It is left-leaning lawmakers who limit the size of my toilet tank and define in law the gas mileage my car must get. It is the bluest of blue areas that ban smoking in public places. It was Hillary Clinton who proposed a single-payer health care system that Stalin would have envied. He says, I'm unable to hear the conclusion. He says, please enlighten me. Higher taxes and greater regulation often advocated by progressives impose on both producers' and consumers' choices. And, you know, on the surface, it all sounds just great, right? I mean, it sounds like he's right on the surface. And that's the thing. The cons have succeeded in reducing real issues, down to 3- and 4-word sound public education system. Why? Because, in my opinion, because for two reasons. One, because our teachers are unionized, and this is part of the war against organized labor, number one. Number two, because our public education system represents the last opportunity for people to pull themselves, or the first, really. It's the first leap up that you can take. But in many ways, if it's taken away, it'll also be the last opportunity for people to lift themselves out of poverty. It's only with a decent education that anybody can get anywhere. And cons have been working so aggressively to defund our public schools. And when they talk about school choice and vouchers for schools, what they're really talking about are two things. Number one is, let's help transfer public money, tax money taken away from you and me, and you would think conservatives would be opposed to this. Let's transfer public money to religious schools. That's number one. And there's a large constituency for that. You've got a lot of churches. You've got, you know, the Catholics, the Moonies. You've got a whole bunch of them out there who are really pushing for that. It's why the Washington Times is gung-ho on this. It's owned by Reverend Moon. And the second is, let's give more tax money, more of our tax money to the wealthy. The typical vouchers that have been proposed in voucher systems are for $2,000 a year. Most schools, you know, a private school typically costs $5,000, $6,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year. It costs around $5,600 a year. I think that's the national average to educate a child. So a $2,000 voucher is going to do no good at all for the average in the United States. It's not enough to move their child. But it's a $2,000 reduction in the cost of education for rich folks. And that's what that's about. We'll take the rest of these issues one at a time as we continue. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and I keep an old Castro down.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Conservatives support school choice. Well, see, here's the thing. If we don't have public schools anymore, Say actually that it costs an average of $5,600 a year to educate a child, and we gave out $5,600 vouchers to everybody with a child, and they could pick and choose their schools entirely. There was no more public education. Wouldn't we, as we the people collectively, wouldn't we then find ourselves even more involved in this? I mean, because we there are certain things we want to be sure that people understand. There are certain things in a democracy you say, hey, you want people to know these things. It's important that people understand these things. It's important that people, you know, you want people to understand civics. You want them to know history. You want them to have certain levels of reading and writing and all that. So you're back to creating standards. So what have you done? You've simply moved it very quickly. You've moved our tax dollars, the use of our tax dollars, away from not-for-profit schools, public schools, which are not run for a profit. No stockholders are getting dividends from our public schools. No CEOs are making millions of dollars from our public schools. There are no big corporate headquarters for our public schools. They don't run advertising on TV. You would move it away from that very efficient system. Yes, sometimes government does things efficiently. And here I am speaking. I am the president of the board of directors of a private school. It's a private school for children with attention deficit disorder. It's called Hunter School. You can go to hunterschool.org. That's the website for it. I know what I'm speaking of. I spent the better part of a half a decade doing in-service trainings for both public and private schools. I was the keynote speaker 2 years ago at the Montessori School National Convention. I understand education. And I'm telling you that what this is an attempt, on the one hand, by corporations and those who believe that corporations are the answers to everything, to grab our public money. And on the other hand, you know, via the vouchers, and they will, and the cost of education will go up. Because, the school that I'm chairman of the board of, for which I'm not paid, by the way, is a nonprofit organization. But there are, you know, this is being pushed by folks who are in the for-profit school business. And it's being pushed by religious folks who want to take our tax dollars and promote their religion. That's number one. We'll go through a few other issues. Let's take a few phone calls first, though. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number here on the Tom Hartman Show. TomHartman.com, our website, if you'd like to drop into our chat room. And Alan in Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
I'd like to say that I hear the Republicans complain about MoveOn.org so much, I figure that must be a pretty good organization. And before the election, I supported them, and it looks like I need to keep supporting them because it sounds like it's one of the best things we have.
Well, it's one of the few groups that has actually gotten their act together with regard to the internet, and this is in what gives me hope for the Democratic Party. You know, in '92, when Gore and Clinton, principally Clinton, put together the Democratic Leadership Council, which is not the Democratic National Committee, the DLC, not the DNC, it was basically an organization to suck up to big corporations and take contributions from them because there was no other way that they could figure out to get money. The unions had been killed off by Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush by years of conservative economics, and they were in free fall. And there just wasn't the cash out there from the people. So how do you get the money from the average guy, you know, the average working guy? You can't do it, so you have to go to the corporations. Now what MoveOn.org has demonstrated and what Howard Dean demonstrated is that you can use the internet to get money for political campaigns, and I think that that's going to give the Democratic Party an opportunity to get its spine back, and I think that that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Democrats challenging this election.
Okay, and how can, like me as a typical... just a truck driver, how can I get Howard Dean, the head of the Democratic Party? What can I do?
I would suggest that you contact, if you have any elected Democratic officials, any elected officials in your states who are Democrats, call their offices and ask them to push for Howard Dean to be the head of the DNC. Because they're okay. The ones ultimately who will have the say, particularly the statewide, you know, if you have a congressman or senator, but even the local, anybody. Contact your local party, too. 29 minutes past the
Hank
hour.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In a historic move to start the new year, seven major railroad unions have come together to create one massive bargaining unit. Dubbed the Rail Labor Bargaining Coalition, the goal of the new collaboration is to coordinate upcoming contract negotiations with rail carriers. The coalition represents 85,000 rail workers, and the seven partner unions will not sign any agreements until all of the members agree on terms. The coalition is made up of the American Train Dispatchers, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and the rail divisions of the Teamsters, the Service Employees International Union, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the Sheet Metal Workers.
St. John's Medical Center and the 1,200 striking nurses meet again Friday for talks ordered by federal mediators. Union spokesman Ed Finkelstein says that patients are recounting numerous problems with care inside St. John's.
We're getting all kinds of feedback from patients in the hospital that the conditions are terrible. Unfortunately, a couple of patients who have been willing to go public have backed off because of the fear for their children who have to go back into the hospital. But we have mothers whom I've talked to personally who say that if it wasn't for the fact that they were monitoring their own children's medication, these temporary nurses would have made serious mistakes.
The union has also filed another unfair labor practice charge against St. John's for allegedly blackballing a union nurse at another Missouri facility because she's honoring the St. John's picket line.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is seeking approval from a federal judge in a multi-million dollar settlement involving Ford Motors and the United Auto Workers of America. The complaint was filed by the commission on behalf of 11 Ford employees who say that they were discriminated against in apprenticeship programs at two Ohio plants. If approved, Ford will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the nearly 3,400 employees affected by the decision. The automaker will also pay $1.7 million in lawyers' fees and court costs. Neither Ford or the union have admitted any wrongdoing.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's music has stopped over a pay dispute in the new proposed musicians' contract, but union spokesman Jan Gippo says it's not a strike.
We're locked out.
Orchestra musicians took a pay cut last time, and they're trying to get back on track with wages. Gippo says the current management proposal will leave orchestra musicians paid less in 3 years than they're getting now.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A projection of a shortage of 10 million skilled workers in the United States by 2008 is seen as a potential crisis for some, but for others, it's a chance for greater happiness. While many employees currently feel outraged by healthcare costs, pension cuts, and mass layoffs, an improving economy with a lack of skilled labor could swing things toward the workers' favor. In fact, a recent study by staffing agency Safirion shows just that. Respondents unhappy in their current job situation say that as soon as the economy turns around, they'll be seeking new employment on their own terms.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Old man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Chris Dodd is speaking right now.
And being a teacher for 40 years. We also require under that bill that we adopted overwhelmingly here, the requirement that every voter have the right to see their ballot before they actually cast their ballot. And the Sixth Circuit of the United States has said that for the rights in this bill, there are remedies. So we've made great progress here. More needs to be done. Clearly, if we're going to make a federal election system exist where every vote will be counted and that every person will have the right who has the right to vote.
And that is not what we have right now, unfortunately. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And David Swanson is back with us with the ILCA. David is with the International Labor Communications Association, ilcaonline.org is their website. He's also a board member of the Progressive Democrats of America. And David's been is in Washington, D.C., and has been keeping track of what's going on in the House and Senate. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's a thank you for calling in every hour with your reports. Did you find out the answer to our question about how the House and Senate, now that they've gone into special two-hour session and each person only has 5 minutes to speak, how those persons who will be able to speak are chosen?
Well, I have at least a partial answer for you, which is that they switch back and forth between someone objecting to the votes from the state and someone supporting them, and each person gets 5 minutes. Now, the person who gets to speak for the opposition or for the support is basically the senator or the congressmember who rises and advances to the front of the chamber. So expecting a certain degree of decorum, they aren't going to fight each other for next place in line. That's how it works. But one senator who's given 5 minutes can yield 1 or 2 minutes to a colleague, and that's happened in a number of cases here in both chambers. So not everyone has taken their full 5 minutes.
Yeah. Interesting.
What we have seen that's interesting is we've seen several senators and several Congress members speak in favor of challenging the Ohio results that we didn't know about before. So if you count the Congress members who had expressed their support this morning and the new ones who have spoken already, we have 15 House members and 10 senators now on the record protesting this result.
That's remarkable. That's great. Because this is just wrong. Hedda Diebold writes a fundraising letter saying we're going to deliver Ohio for the Republicans. You can use a Diebold machine to put money in the bank and get a receipt, but if you use a Diebold machine to vote, you don't have any idea what happened to that vote. Nothing.
That's right. It's absolutely absurd, and it doesn't happen in a lot of other countries that have got their act together. But if you noticed, Senator Reid said he was going to be introducing an election reform bill in a few days.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in it, but we need to start talking to Senator Reid pretty heavily now over the next couple of days.
Yeah, hopefully this will rise to the level of the news. We went out and turned on the TV and checked, and CNN was talking about cable TVs, about cell phones. And so I gave out CNN's phone number and said, somebody call CNN and tell them there's real news happening in the House and the Senate right now. And it was like, and then they broke in about 5 minutes later going, there's been a challenge, but it's not going to change the vote. So we're going to go back to talking about cell phones.
Right. I heard they had someone on there saying that this was showmanship by the Democrats trying to score points. It was just theater.
Yeah.
You know, that's a little insulting to something as fundamental as whether we have a democracy in this country.
Right, and whether we have a fair vote. Do you have a list of the senators and Congress members of Congress who have come forward at the moment?
Absolutely. The senators who have spoken in support of challenging the Ohio results include Senator Boxer, who started it off. We then had a Democrat speak against Senator Dayton of Ohio, which is a little troubling for a Democratic Party that's trying to recreate itself. We then had Senator Durbin, who introduced Congressman Conyers' report for the record. We had Senator Kennedy, which was a pleasant surprise. Before Kennedy, we had Debbie Stabenow. Following Kennedy, we had Senator Wyden of Oregon, Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey, Senator Hillary Clinton of New York, Senator Reid, Senator Harkin, Senator Obama, who gave a terrific speech while Congressman Kucinich was going on in the other chamber, and Senator Dodd when we came on the air.
Yeah. So, over on the House side, who has spoken? Do you know?
In the House, the Congress members who have spoken for, I'm omitting those who have spoken against, are Stephanie Tubbs Jones, John Conyers, who yielded a minute also to Bernie Sanders, which was a nice surprise, Mel Watt, North Carolina, Congresswoman Napolitano, Nancy Pelosi. And I should note that Nancy Pelosi, as well as a number of others, have said this is not about the results. It's clear who won. This is about the process, which is the message that a lot of activists have been pushing in order to get more Congress members on board with this.
Yeah.
But when you come down to it, there's a contradiction in, you know, the system is fundamentally broken, but the system worked reliably.
Right.
You know, I can't get that straight in my head. I get, in addition, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Marcy Kaptur of Ohio, Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, who yielded a minute to Barbara Lee of California, and then I don't know who's on now.
Yeah. Okay. Great, David. Thank you so much for. Hang on, just a second. Let me just make sure. I got a couple of callers here. John in Boston, is your question about the election or something that David might be able to answer, or do you want to go off on another topic?
Are you talking to me, Tom?
Yeah.
Hi, this is John.
Right, in Boston.
No, not specifically to David, but I was going to say that I wanted to thank you, too, for what you do, Tom. But I called Blackwell's office in Ohio.
Oh, interesting.
And I simply asked if they knew anything about Bobber Boxer's decision to dispute the election. And their answer was a kind and gracious no. And when they said that, I simply stated that my hope that Ken Blackwell, along with millions of other people that feel the same way, will be prosecuted to the full letter of the law for what he did, tried to usurp the democratic process.
Wow.
They said, thank you very much, and that was the end of it, and that was democratic on my part. But I just want to know, will he be prosecuted somehow because of what he did?
Well, that's a good question. That's a really good
question. I'll hang
up
and listen to what you have to say.
Thanks
thank
a lot,
you.
John. I'll tell you, you know, they're going to have to find the smoking gun memo kind of thing. I mean, the sorts of things, rearranging machines and whatnot. Well, David, what are your thoughts on that? You've been in the middle of this for some time.
Well, speaking of memos, Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey held up a 5-foot-high blow-up of a letter that Ken Blackwell wrote to Congressman Conyers, refusing to answer any of Congressman Conyers' questions in a rather disrespectful manner. And it's a good enough smoking gun for me, but he should be fully investigated. Whether that will happen with the current Justice Department and the current Congress, I don't know, but he should be.
Yeah, good one. Okay. Bill in New York City, or in New York. Bill, is this? Are you calling about the election stuff, or do you want to move on to another topic?
I kind of agree with what your last caller was saying about the fact of, to quote the phrase, mixed messages. You're telling us that you're contesting the vote, but then on the other hand, you're turning around and you're saying that you don't think it's going to change the election.
Yeah, how do these members of Congress and the Senate, do you think that this is just political cover, David? Do you think that they're just unwilling to really push it all the way? David Swanson.
Well, I can't tell you who's not giving it to us straight. You have to assume some people are being honest, but but it's safer for them to not challenge the outcome and to simply say that they are in favor of fair elections. It's safer for them to do that. And we wanted people to do that, even if they would not say it's about the election. But those who stop and think for 5 minutes, like your caller, realize that if the system's broken, we don't necessarily know who won.
Yeah, in fact, that's what I've been saying all along. I mean, my take on this is if you have a vote that is not transparent and you have exit polls which show that nationwide John Kerry got 2 or 3% more votes than George W. Bush did, and that in the state of Ohio in particular he got 3% more votes than George W. Bush did, and you have then voting machines that are saying something different, we have a situation here like they had in the Ukraine, which is the possibility of a stolen election, in my opinion. Bill, does that satisfy your question?
Yeah, but unfortunately, though, because of what they're doing, I was slipping around on the Sirius satellite, so I threw on some of the right-wing stations, and because of the stand that the Democrats are taking, basically they brought their boat down to the water and left the paddles home, and the right-wing is just ripping them apart and going, no, it's not about that. They want to get rid of the Electoral College and all other kinds of nonsense where they're just ripping into the Democrats because they really didn't get enough of a backbone to stand up and say, we should count them and see if it really is legit.
Well, let's give it a little time, Bill. There were folks talking about what was going on in the Nixon administration and this little Watergate burglary that was a second-rate burglary that happened before the 72 election. And, you know, 2 years later, Nixon was out on his butt. Let's give it a little time. This is a major opening salvo. This is a major opening salvo.
I agree with that.
And so I'm not. Of course, the cons are going to do everything they can to cut these folks off at the knees, ridicule them, make fun of them. But the reality is that this is big. I mean, this is something that hasn't happened, to the best of my knowledge, in the history of the Republic. It's big. Bill, thanks for the call from New York.
Can I say one quick thing?
Sure.
Too, is that I first heard of you from Air America, and ever since then, my wife and myself, we are hooked on you. Whatever you're doing, just keep on doing it, and you're doing it well.
Well, thank you, Bill. That's very kind to hear. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And feel free to call in any old time. It's 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. David Swanson, any last thoughts that you want to share?
Well, I'm with you. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think this is the introduction of a second party to a one-party system, and we'll see how it grows from here. But this is important.
Yeah, the return of the Democratic Party to the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
Exactly.
Hopefully. We'll see. Okay. David, thanks so much for being with us. I do appreciate it. And
thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, we will. Okay. Bye now. It's 15 minutes. Yeah, 15, 16? What is that? 15 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We can go back to our list of what conservatives and liberals believe in. It might be entertaining, but let's take a call from Canada here. Tim is on the line. Tim, where in Canada are you?
I'm in northern British Columbia, Canada, Tom.
Oh, beautiful country. God's country.
I'm listening to you on the computer right now, but normally I listen to you in my truck on the Sirius satellite radio.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind?
I'm just wondering, Tom, with all the turmoil with regards to your election process that's going on down there, I'm wondering why, when the people are registered to vote, why is it that they need to declare their Republican or Democratic status? Isn't that one of the easiest ways to find out whether or not or a group of people can be defrauded of their vote?
Well, yes and no. It's not quite that simple, Tim. First of all, it varies from state to state. But, for example, here in Vermont, I can register as a Republican, I can register as a Democrat, I can register as an independent, or none of the above. I can simply register to vote. In most states, it's pretty much that case. The reason why they have registration by party is because in some states, in many states, I frankly don't know the number of them, if you want to vote in the primary where a party is selecting its candidate, you must be a member of that party. In other words, you must be registered in that party. And the reason for that is because both parties have a long history of dirty tricks where, say, let's say the Republican Party had a really strong candidate and a really weak candidate running against each other in the primary to see who would get to run against the Democrat. Okay? And it was a state where Anybody could vote. It's what's called an open primary. Anybody could vote in the primaries. And let's say I'm a Democrat, and I want the weak Republican to be the guy who's going to have to go up against my guy, the Democrat. So I go in, and I vote in the Republican primary instead of the Democratic primary for the weak Republican. And that has happened many, many times. And then you end up with the weak candidate, the weak Republican, getting the most votes because a whole bunch of Democrats did what's called crossover voting in the primaries. And then the Republican Party then essentially gets screwed. It happens both the Republican Party, Democratic Party, Green Party, whatever. It happens all over the place. And so most states, to solve that problem, have said, if you want to vote in the Republican primary, the only way you can do it is if when you register to vote, you declare yourself a Republican. So that we can know that at the last minute you're not just, you know, switching sides to mess with the system. That's why it's set up that way. Now, the problem that you identified, and it's a very real problem, is that when the voting rolls are published, because these are public records, you can get a list of all the registered Democrats, all the registered Republicans. And in this last election, we saw very clearly, we saw a situation where, for example, in the states of Ohio, the state of Florida, the state of New Mexico, the state of Nevada, the state of Oregon, maybe not Oregon, maybe it was Washington, one of the northwestern states, where people were being telephoned the day before the election. Registered Democrats were being telephoned the day before the election and being told that there was such a large voter turnout happening that the Republicans were going to vote on Tuesdays and the Democrats are going to vote on Wednesday. And so don't show up on the polls on Tuesday, wait until the following day. Number one. Or they had a list of registered Democrats. They would compare that against a map system and figure out which of those were from minority areas. And they would call them up and say, and this, again, was documented, another Republican dirty trick. They were calling black Democrats, African-American Democrats, and saying, if any member of your family has committed a crime, you may be arrested when you go to vote.
Well, and, you know, Tom, it's really unfortunate that your country is in the process of such political turmoil. I kind of became a bit of a political junkie while leading up to this election for about 6 months prior. I never had paid so much attention to it. But one thing that you know, here, when I recently voted in our last election that we had here, it was pencil and paper and a paper ballot.
And that's what it is all across Canada.
Yeah,
and,
you know,
and God bless you. I think it's great. Tim, we're out of time, unless there's a final point you want me to hold you over for. But
no, that's great, Tom. Thank you very much for the information.
I appreciate it. Good, and thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute, 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush-O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Have you ever got a note from your bank saying,
"Greetings, your account just shrank by 25 or 30 bucks. Sorry, friend, you're out of luck. You bounced a check. That's what it was. It happens to the best of us. Please cover it quick."
And when you do, you find you got another one or two.
Because what they done, I never seen it fail. They notified you by the U.S. mail. Cost them almost 40 cents, but more than worth that little expense. Because by the time you receive that letter, their situation got even better. Your first overdraft cost a couple more. Now you owe them a pile of money for sure.
And welcome back. Yeah, they do it all perfectly legally because they buy our elected representatives. The banking industry, one of the larger donors to the House and Senate. And local, but that's a whole other rant. Cecilia in Seminole County, Florida, on the line. Hey, Cecilia, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, and Happy New Year to you, too.
I hope so. Last one didn't end so well. Anyway, I have a comment and a question for you.
Sure.
I'm glued to C-SPAN, and it's just absolutely wonderful to see Bernie Sanders and my hero Dennis Kucinich and others. I mean, the Democrats have found a spine today.
Yeah. Yeah, and Baruch Hashem. I mean, thank God. It's incredible. And you know, I track it all back to Howard Dean.
Yeah.
I really do.
And Dennis Kucinich. I had the privilege and pleasure of meeting him during the Democratic presidential before the primaries, and he came down to the Orlando area. And he was full of spit and fire and I mean, he's just wonderful. And he was up there. And Bernie, boy, you ought to be proud of him, and I know you are.
Yeah, well, I didn't catch his performance, but I'm sure I will.
It was great. Now, my question is, yesterday you had some bumper music, and I've been on the Internet searching for it, and what it was a spoof derived from the Chicago musical Razzle Dazzle.
Right.
Who did your bumper, your spoof on?
You know, I don't know. Louise does that stuff, and
let us know, because I'm very interested.
Louise?
I thought it was very well done, and I love all your bumper music. I mean, we need to have, you know where the sources are and support that kind of music.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll do two things. Number one, on the message board, TomHartmann.com, I'll post it once I find out. And secondly, we play that from time to time. Next time we play it, I'll find out. Next time we play it, I'll credit them.
That'd be great. Keep up the good work. I love your show. Listen every time that I'm home and not at work. And I just really appreciate everything you're doing. And it looks like you're on your way up, and good for you.
Yeah, well, we shall see. Hopefully this year can only get better than last, right?
You got your fan base here.
There you go. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for the call. Good to hear from you. Oh, my. It's a history-making day, a truly history-making day, a challenge to the Electoral College, an opportunity to reform a corrupt and broken electoral system in the United States, and to point out, it's the Billionaires for Bush who did the music. Ira tells me, Cecilia, it's Billionaires for Bush. You can find it on their website, Billionaires for Bush. Anyhow, great, great opportunity. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results.